May it please the court, William Jovan for the Scott appellants. This case brings to this court a unique fact pattern in which the question is whether or not maritime jurisdiction attaches to the facts presented. And I know the court's familiar with the facts, but in a nutshell, the plaintiff here was engaged in the ongoing marine activity, which was initiated by the vessel and required an exercise of his duties to be on and off the vessel, and in particular was injured during a closure phase of the operation while he happened to be standing on the adjoining pier dock. There are two appeals in this case from two summary judgment orders. The first one is from the summary judgment granted to the crane owner and operator. As to that, we believe that the extension of Admiralty Jurisdiction Act of 1948, which specifically brings all cases within its ambit, is applicable here. And there doesn't seem to be any doubt in this case that the injury arose out of a maritime activity or relationship. The plaintiff submits that the instrumentality or appurtenance of the vessel, namely the life raft, is one of the causative factors of this injury. That all being said, I think just to cut to the quick, what we're talking about in this case is this case more like Gutierrez versus Waterman Steamship Company, or is it more like Victory Carriers versus Law? Both U.S. Supreme Court cases, both authored by Justice White. In Gutierrez, Justice White wrote that the extension of Admiralty Jurisdiction Act would be interpreted to a fact pattern where a purely dock-based worker slipped on a beam that had leaked from a cargo container that had been taken off the ship and placed on the dock. Justice White and the court, of course, found in that case that the act, applying its literal terms, that the presence of the beam on the dock constituted an injury caused by a vessel, as that terminology is interpreted in the act.
Wouldn't you suggest, though, in that case, Mr. Jovan, that connection to the vessel was less tenuous than we have in this raft situation?
Well, it can be said. I think the point I'm trying to make to your honors is there was a literal application of the extension of Admiralty jurisdiction.
Well, the container was, I think a case can be made as, if not an appurtenance to the ship, was a unique unique connection. A raft could be, but this one seemed to not have the vessel connect, did it not, that we have in the...
Well,
I don't want to split hairs, and
that's, unfortunately, I think your honor characterizes that correctly. Are we splitting hairs when we get down to this? When we see a literal interpretation of a coffee bean, a dock worker slipping on a coffee bean being injured, and the court says, well, that's what the act says, and we interpret that to be an injury caused by a vessel.
But wasn't the problem there? It was a defective container that was,
yes.
It was a defective container. So maybe if we'd had a raft and, I don't know, something connected to the raft, you know, because I don't know much about rafts, but if there was some piece of equipment on the raft and it was loose and that fell off when the crane dropped it. I mean, that would be more akin to this Gutierrez case than our situation, because there's no allegation here that there's any problem with the raft. So,
Your Honor perceives that correctly. The defectiveness of the appurtenance is in Gutierrez. However, I believe I've set forth in our brief that in later cases the Supreme Court said you do not need a defective appurtenance so long as the appurtenance plays a causative role in causing the injury. It's in my brief. I'm sorry, I can't put my finger on it right. And it's in the reply brief, I believe, because the appellees have made that point.
Well, let me ask you a hypothetical. What if a car were speeding through the area and the car hit the crane and that caused it to drop the lifeboat on Scott? Would you say it was admiralty jurisdiction?
Well, I would have to honestly say I don't think so. But I don't think that's akin to our situation. Mr. Scott, on this particular day and on many other days, spends most all of his time engaged in marine activity and in this kind of thing with relation to all of the gambling boats there in Indiana, I believe.
If they didn't pass the test, the lifeboat test, could the ship move, go anywhere?
No. No, this was a... This activity on this day was pursuant to a Coast Guard directive, and the Coast Guard was there. We want the Trump crew to demonstrate to us that their lifeboats can be deployed and are working properly to our satisfaction, otherwise this boat's not going anywhere. The record is replete with the necessity for this drill to be conducted. The plaintiff was there from start to finish, and...
Well, Scott left his ship and went on a lifeboat over to the pier.
Well, I believe the evidence we presented shows the Trump people brought the lifeboat over the pier, because
Part of the crew, ship crew on the lifeboat?
They brought the lifeboat to the pier, and then either they got out and left it there, and Scott, he didn't get in, but I think one of his people got in and attached the crane ball to the thing to hoist it out.
Mr. Chavan, do we have a navigable vessel here?
I believe, yes. That hasn't been, I know we got a dispute on that today, but that hasn't been raised in this case, and so I haven't really considered it, but I assume there's testimony, I believe, that he's gone out on the vessels and conducted drills while he's out there. I would ask the court to compare Victory Carriers with Gutierrez. Victory Carriers is purely, strictly, without any qualification, a pier-based dock worker getting injured by a pier-based forklift truck while moving cargo up, I believe, toward the edge of the dock so it can be prepared to be loaded on a ship at some time, either that day or another day. Obviously, it's the other extreme. I think Justice White made that clear. He goes into great analysis about why Gutierrez held the way it did and why Victory Carriers is being decided the way it is, and correctly so. We can't have any dispute with that. We just don't have that kind of a fact pattern here. The only other issue is the appeal from the other summary judgment for Trump. It's kind of an odd quirk in the law, but the Longshoremen's Act has this section, Section 905B, that anyone who is injured by negligence of a vessel, and here again we're talking almost about the same kind of thing, so everything we've argued about why maritime jurisdiction applies to the Lola Crane thing also applies as to the Trump thing. Unfortunately, the district court knocked us out on the basis of things that weren't argued. He just said he searched the record and he doesn't see any negligence whatsoever on behalf of the Trump vessel here. That wasn't the issue. We weren't asked to provide any facts or conditions concerning that. In defense now of the district court's opinion, Trump now presents this score. We'll look at the plaintiff's complaint. It just says negligence. It doesn't specifically allege any particular matters, and therefore the summary judgment was correct. Well, if that was the problem, they should have come in on a motion, and we would have amended the complaint and told them what we believe were the negligent causative factors in the case.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Belgrade?
May it please the court. First, let me just address a couple of points that have come up so far, particularly this negligence thing, which is really a big red herring that, in fact, was directly raised with the court below.
Not appropriate for a maritime case, right? A herring?
A herring, that's correct. But it might be more maritime then. But the claim, and we didn't even respond to this because we just didn't think it had any merit at all, that the negligence issue wasn't before the court is just wrong. If you review the pleadings we filed at that time, beginning with document 36, which is our motion for summary judgment, we comment on the negligence issue on page 3, paragraph 13, page 4, paragraph 14 and 15, page 5, paragraph 19, page 6 and 7, paragraph 25. In our initial brief, and this is probably the most important thing, which is document 39 on page 9, we specifically argue in our initial brief, and I'm quoting, here Scott was allegedly injured when struck by a life raft. However, plaintiff's injury was not occasioned by the negligence of the Trump vessel that was in navigation. As this court has already found, and I quote part of the court about there was no involvement by Trump, it was all related to the crane by another company, hired by another company, and operated by another company. As this court also found, Scott was not involved in the process of loading or unloading the Trump vessel. Accordingly, he cannot maintain an action pursuant to Longshoremen and Harbor Workers' Compensation Act. Again, in our reply brief, which is document 43, we have several pages where we discuss this very issue, pages 1 and 2, pages 7 through 8, and pages 8 through 12, where we devote whole sections to the argument. So to say that it wasn't raised at the trial court is just incorrect. Now, the main thrust of the argument, besides the utter lack of any negligence, is the fact that under the Longshoremen Act, quite frankly, you have to be a longshoreman. And Mr. Scott is not a longshoreman as defined by that act. To be a longshoreman, you either have to be one of the occupations that 33 U.S.C. Starts at 901, but the various provisions define that a longshoreman is someone such as a stevedore, a construction shipbuilder, a repairman, and they specifically designate certain occupations. He is not any one of those. The Supreme Court has also said you can also be a longshoreman if you're involved in the loading and unloading of a vessel. Clearly not the case here. There's absolutely no evidence of loading and unloading. And we cited, for instance, the Herbs Welding, which specifically says if you want to come under this act, you need to be involved in the process of loading and unloading.
Let me ask you this. Do longshoremen typically have any role in loading and unloading a lifeboat?
Not usually. In this case, I think is a better way to answer the question. The specific hiring of this company, MGI, Total Marine Safety, Mr. Scott's employer, was specifically to provide the services of giving a life raft for the vessel and then providing training to show the crew how to do this. You have to keep in mind that most of the crew are people like dealers at tables. It's like Las Vegas, basically. These people are not the typical hardcore maritime workers. So they hired a company to basically supply and this is the vendor exception, which I'll get into very shortly, but to supply the raft and then train people how to do it. So they were totally involved in this whole process. And to go back to an earlier question, when this drill took place, nothing happened. The drill was over. Anything, if you want to even say that was maritime, and I would submit that would not be related to the Longshoremen Act, which is the only cause of action we've been sued on. But thereafter, everything was over. The company is then taking this raft and going to take it back to their facility and repackage it and then ultimately supply it again back to the vessel. So they're doing that, not the vessel. And typically the vessel people, even in a real maritime enterprise, would hire people to provide those types of supplies, which brings me directly into the vendor exception, which is 902 subpart 3, which specifically provides an exemption for a company such as and employees like Mr. Scott. There's a vendor exception that if it's somebody who supplies or provides vending services, which is exactly what was the case here, that there's an exemption from being able to sue under the Longshoremen Act because, again, it has nothing related to the loading or unloading of cargo. There is not a cargo aspect. And just a quick aside, with respect to this Gutierrez case, and all the cases, frankly, that's been cited by the appellant, they're all cargo-related. In that case, there were beans falling from a cargo process of unloading a container. And, in fact, if you look at cases that have discussed this very issue, that's where they cut off the difference. For instance, the Schwab case, which is also cited by the plaintiff, a U.S. Supreme Court case, 493 U.S. 40, they make a big deal about, well, here's some people on the pier that were able to sue under the Longshoremen Act. Well, sure, it involved part of the cargo falling off of conveyor belts and they coming in to then remedy the problem. It directly was an integral part of cargo. And the Schwab case specifically said, in order to recover under the Longshoremen Act, and this is their case, it must be integral to an essential part of loading or unloading the vessel. And that's on page 45 of that opinion. They then, the Supreme Court in that case, specifically says, just because you're in the area doesn't make you a longshoreman. And they say on page 46, the Supreme Court, if not performing such tasks, even if present in the area, you're not covered under the Longshoremen Act. And that's exactly what we have here. We have someone who had absolutely nothing to do with the loading of or unloading of cargo on the vessel. Now, getting into this negligence point, again, and I think the trial court was absolutely correct about this, what was Trump doing? They had absolutely nothing to do with what was going on at the time. There was no personnel present. There was a crane arranged by Mr. Scott's employer. There was a crane operated by Lola Crane Company. Not one employee of Trump was in this area when this operation was taking place.
Wasn't part of the crew, though, on the life raft?
When they had done the drill a time before this, there was crew involved because, in fact, it was done for purposes of training the crew how to do lifeboat drills. Once that was completed, they then returned to the vessel. Now the company is taking the raft and returning it to their facility where they're going to repackage it so it can be used another time. So that whole enterprise is completed, and the Trump people have nothing to do with it. And I think Justice Williams made a good point as far as what's wrong. There was nothing wrong with anything from the vessel. There was nothing that was defective in any vessel equipment. There was nothing involving the personnel. And I think it's important in a longshoreman case, and that's the only allegations against us, you have to meet the Scindia requirements of the U.S. Supreme Court. And once operations take place, there's no duty, and I'll complete my portion now, there's no duty to inspect or supervise what's going on. And there's just absolutely no evidence that Trump did anything. So for all those reasons, the trial court was correct, and they would ask the court.
Thank you, Mr. Belgrade.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. LaPorte.
May it please the court, my name is David LaPorte, and I represent Lola Crane Rental and Mark Nichols. I'd like to start just by emphasizing some of the facts and which were articulated, some of which were articulated by Mr. Belgrade. Lola Crane Rental was hired by MGI America. Lola Crane Rental was not hired by the Trump Casino. Lola Crane agreed to provide a truck crane to MGI America. Lola Crane did not agree to provide a crane to the Trump Casino. There was no contractual relationship between Lola Crane Rental and the vessel or the vessel owner. The crane was owned by Lola Crane. The crane was never touching, abutting, or loaded upon the vessel. The crane that was provided was a land-based crane in the truest sense of that word. It was a truck crane. It was driven to Buffington Harbor by Mr. Nichols. It had wheels on it. It had a compartment at one end that you sit in when you drive it down the highway. It had a compartment on the other end that you sit in when you operate the crane. When Mr. Nichols arrived with the crane at Buffington Harbor, he took direction and control from nobody other than MGI America. Nobody from the Trump Casino directed or controlled or supervised the activities of Lola Crane or Mark Nichols while they were at Buffington Harbor. Once the life raft was deployed from the Trump Casino, it was in the possession and control of MGI America. It was no longer in the possession or control of the Trump Casino. It was then taken several hundred yards from the Trump Casino to the pier where it was attached to the crane by employees of MGI America, not the Trump Casino. MGI employees then signaled to Mark Nichols that it was ready to lift the crane, the life raft. The life raft was lifted with the crane, operated by Mark Nichols, and carried across the pier. At that time, it struck the plaintiff, Russell Scott. The allegations against Lola Crane and Mark Nichols is that they negligently operated, maintained, and controlled the crane, the land-based crane. The plaintiff did not allege that the instrumentality of the injuries was the life raft. The only allegations is the negligent operation and control of the land-based crane. I know of no case, and I've been able to find no case that extends maritime jurisdiction to the facts of the case so far. A pier-based accident caused by the alleged negligent operation and control of land-based equipment that was not owned, operated, possessed, maintained, or controlled by the vessel or the vessel's crew. The plaintiff in his reply brief points to a case, Huser versus Santa Fe Pomeroy, a 1975 Ninth Circuit decision, where the plaintiff in that case was injured when he was struck by concrete pilings that were being moved with a crane. But the similarities between Huser in our case and there, because in Huser, the crane was not land-based, it was based upon the vessel. The crane was owned by the vessel. The crane operator was a member of the vessel's crew. And the entire crew supervising the operation of the crane were all employees of the vessel. None of those facts are present here. The facts are just the opposite. We relied on primarily on two cases, the United States Supreme Court's decision, a 1971 decision written by Justice White, Victory Carriers versus Law. I did discuss that at length in the brief, but Victoria Carriers versus Law was a limitation on Gutierrez. It limited the application of Gutierrez, and the holding in that case was that maritime jurisdiction does not extend to pier-based accidents caused by pier-based equipment. And the factors that the court considered in the Victoria Carey's Law's decision was that the equipment that caused the injury was not part of the ship's usual gear and was not stored upon the ship, just like we have here. The equipment that injured the plaintiff was in no way attached to the ship. The equipment that injured the plaintiff was not under the control of the ship or its crew, and the accident did not occur on board the ship. Exactly the fact pattern we have here. We rely on another case, Margin versus Sealand Services, a 1987 Fifth Circuit decision, which is pretty much directly on point. In Margin, a land-based crane was moving a hatch that had been removed from the vessel, was moving it across the pier, and the plaintiff was injured because the hatch almost hit the plaintiff and he took evasive action to avoid it. The Fifth Circuit held no maritime jurisdiction existed because, just as here, the life raft was not the cause of the injury. the hatch was not the cause of the injury in margin. So there's no, the Fifth Circuit held that there was no maritime jurisdiction. The law is clear. Maritime jurisdiction requires that the location prong be satisfied. The location prong requires either an injury occurring in navigable waters or an injury, if it occurs on land, it must be caused by the vessel's crew, or an appurtenance to the vessel. We do not have those facts here. So the trial court was correct in granting summary judgment in favor of Lola Crane and Mark Nichols, and we respectfully ask that the decision of the trial court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. LaFort. Mr. Jovan?
Very briefly, to answer Judge Williams' original question, the case that I saw about was Grubart, where the Supreme Court, that's a great Chicago flood case, noted that the argument that Congress intended admiralty jurisdiction to extend to injuries caused by defective appurtenances, but not to appurtenances in good condition when operated negligently, makes no sense. That's just the answer to your inquiry. I think just to place this whole thing quickly into, get it back in the proper perspective, is the Trump crew had to demonstrate to the Coast Guard that day that it could accurately and safely deploy all the safety equipment should that occasion ever arise. And that's all the drill was being conducted for. And in order to do this, a crane had to be employed. Now, I think the evidence makes very clear that this particular boat had no crane because for a gambling boat it's an unsightly thing to have. But most ships do have some kind of a lifting device. And while it's a technicality, and if we just sit and look at that little phase of the accident, we're talking about a Victory Carriers case. We're talking about a margin case, which is that Fifth Circuit case that's cited there, where...
Before you get into that, can you address the vendor exception that counsel spent... that applies, and also... You know, could you speak to the question of whether longshoremen typically have a role in loading and unloading?
Well, let me answer that this way. The Schwab case that's cited in our brief, while the fact pattern, you know, is not like our fact pattern exactly, which is the way it goes with case law, the Schwab case set out very clearly and simply that coverage is not limited to employees who are denominated longshoremen or who physically handle cargo. And the reason for this is the section in the coverage section of the Longshoremen's Act, I believe we set it out there, it's section 9023, says the term employee means, quote, any person engaged in maritime employment, end quote. And then it goes on, including longshoremen, including any other person engaged in longshoring operations. It doesn't say only longshoremen. So I think that's really a strained interpretation of the Act, because the actual terminology of the Act and the Schwab case backs it up, that it's any person engaged in a maritime activity. I would submit to the court that's what Mr. Scott was doing on this day.
And so you would say that the vendor exception doesn't apply?
Well, as to the vendor exception, on its face, let me say this. And that's why I want the court to look at the whole picture here and not just zero in and microanalyze one section of what happened here. The vendor exception is also section 9023. And it starts out real good for Trump until we get to little triple I, which says if they are not engaged in work normally performed by employees of that employer. And I would submit to the court that on this particular day, when Trump has to make a demonstration that it can take care of its safety requirements to the satisfaction of the Coast Guard, that Mr. Scott was there assisting them and also engaged in work that's normally performed by that crew.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Thanks to all counsel.